Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
You are a listening to Garbled Twistery, and right now we're talking about the second presidential election to ever happen ever. And the next 1792 candidate we're looking at is our cool lawyer man, Johnny Adams. Yeah, it's another guy we already freaking talked about. So, just like last time, it's going to be your typical broadcast review stuff. But then, at the 18 minute and 38 second mark, we're going to talk about how all that vice presidency nonsense that Johnny Adams was up to. All right? All right.
So, the very first presidential election was a real high-class 1788 slobber knocker, and there were many freaking candidates. Let me read out the character select screen. This will be a battle of John versus John versus John versus John versus George versus George versus Samuel versus Benjamin. Yup. That's 8 biographical episodes, including this one. And who are we going to be taking a close look at? My boy, John Adams, of course. So let's freaking do this. Okay, so it all started when some dude named John Adams made a baby with some dudette named Susanna, and they named that baby John Adams because either the patriarchy told them to, or they simply weren't creative people, take your pick. Then they had two other babies named Peter and, wait for it, Elihu. What's that? You didn't hear me correctly? His name was Elihu. What? You need me to spell it? Okay, E-L-I-H-U, Elihu. I am already in disbelief when it comes to this crazy name game that the Adams family is playing. I mean, you have John, Peter, and that freaking Elihu. I mean, all I can say is, wow. So, they all lived in Massachusetts, and his mom was a doctor. Okay, not really. I don't think women are allowed to do stuff yet, but his mom's family members were doctors and stuff, and his dad was a church guy, and a farmer, and a shoemaker, and a lieutenant, and a councilman. Yeah. Johnny Adams was a direct descendant of the Puritans who showed up a while back, so his parents were all like, quote, "Why have free will when you have God?" unquote. He was totally not into stealing loaves of bread. Not in his village, no siree. He was the oldest kid, so he had to go to school. It was the law. And he was always showing up late to Latin class, and rhetoric class, and trig, and logic, and he really didn't like his teachers all that much, and he, like, wanted to be a farmer. Yeah, I'm dead serious. He was reaching for that plow, but then his dad was all like, "Go read books, you nerd!" And he was all like, okay, fine, I'll do it. His dad then got him a new tutor dude, and this guy was apparently cool beans, so yeah. So, like a typical millennial, he went to Harvard at like 16 years old and realized he didn't want to scream in the echoey places about Jesus like his dad did. So after he got his BA, he was being a teacher while also being worried about what the freak he was going to do about his life. And then suddenly it hit him. Quote, "I want to be famous, like that lawyer I saw on TV. What's his name? Bob Odenkirk." Unquote. So he wrote a letter to his dad. It said, quote, "Lawyers are cool. They, like, yell at stuff, and it has a meaningful effect on people's lives. Priests just yell at people and force-feed them wine, but then nothing happens," unquote. Yeah, he went full Unitarian and dropped the whole Holy Trinity stuff in regards to his religion, because I guess all that Holy Ghost stuff got too confusing for the guy. I mean, he still had hang-ups about wanting to be too famous, though. Can't make God too jealous of your ambitions, can you, Johnny Adams? Then the baguettes and powwow war happens, and he's all like, quote, "All my rich friends don't want to fight the baguette people, and I don't know, that seems pretty irresponsible. I mean, we kind of live here, don't we?" Unquote. So, he did the whole internship thing and got to be a lawyer, good times. Then he got his master's from Harvard and stuff. He had a diary, because, like, what else could he possibly do with his time? Play Minecraft? Then he got really sneaky, by getting all political in the newspaper and stuff. Like, he changed his name to Humpty Dumpty Plow Jogger and wrote 7 entire essays bashing the very taxes that England was putting on those very same newspapers. Sneaky, I tell ya. He was all about that republicanism stuff. No, not republican stuff. Republicanism stuff. They're not the same. Check episode 14. Anyways, in true American fashion, he married his 3rd cousin and they popped out 6 babies.
Yikes.
Oh, do you want names? There's Abigail and Johnny Quiznos and Susanna. She'll die in a year. There was Charlie and Tommy and last but not least, stillborn Liz. His 3 boys became alcoholics. I mean, lawyers. Well, those 2 things aren't mutually exclusive, but Johnny Quiznos was the only lawyer baby who didn't become an alcoholic, probably because he was the only one that was good at lawyering. But anyways, let's focus on Daddy Johnny, shall we? So he started getting super famous for, like, not liking stamps or something. He wrote a piece of paper called the, wait for it,
Braintree Instructions.
Yeah, he sent it to his local government, and I have an excerpt from it right here. Quote, "We have Magna Carta rights. Nobody freaking asked if they could tax us, and we can't even get a jury with our friends in it, and that's just criminal," unquote. Yeah, he was really mad, dude. And then he pulled out that Humphrey Plow Jogger Act again and wrote some more angry essays in the newspapers. He noticed everybody using the Bible to justify the protests and stuff and thought about his dad for a second. Then he went to protest himself and he got himself elected on the board of directors for his town or something. And he had a big, valid stick up his butt about these juryless courtrooms that the Stamp Act low-key allowed to exist. Then, he took his wife and kiddos and moved to Boston just in time for a whole bunch of insane protest nonsense to happen there. So, Humphrey Plow Jogger is sitting in his law offices. It's early in the morning. He's drinking some fresh coffee out of his No Taxation Without Representation artisanal mug that he got for his birthday. A group of King's soldiers rings the cowbell because we don't have electricity yet. "Come in," replies Humphrey Plow Jogger. The soldiers enter. He glances at the group and back at the newspaper he had just read. He eyes their royal name tags. These are men who have been accused of shooting down those 5 protesting civilians. Everyone called it a massacre. When Johnny Adams decided to be a defense attorney, he wasn't expecting a situation like this in his entire career. After a long, uncomfortable pause, Johnny Adams puts down his coffee cup and softly whispers, "Have a seat, gentlemen." Yup. He defended the Boston massacrers. And he even said some famous stuff while doing it, like, quote, "How you feel doesn't matter. The facts are the facts. I'm looking at you, OJ," unquote. He also said, quote, "Look, we can't punish all the guilty people in the world, but the second we punish an innocent person, we defeat the principle of, like, feeling guilty, okay?" Yeah. He got 6 of those soldiers straight up acquitted, and 2 of them, who fired directly into the crowd, only got manslaughter. Better call Saul? More like better call Humphrey Plow Jogger, am I right? No. But really, he rigged that freaking jury so hard that before a witness even came to the stand, we knew there were gonna be acquittals for the British law enforcement before a witness could even step on the stand. You know, before a witness could even step on the stand. Rigging the jury to benefit law enforcement?
Sounds familiar.
This chili I'm eating is suddenly tasting a little spicier. Anyways, all the attention he got with this case made him want to move his family back to Braintree while he stayed in Boston working and lawyering from dawn till dusk. But then he realized he didn't want his family living out in the boonies, so he moved him back to Boston, but then everybody started going freaking bananas in Boston, so he moved back to the boonies with his family, because yeah, Boston was losing its mind. But Johnny Adams was now too famous to escape all this social drama. Like, it was at this point where Parliament had singled out Massachusetts and was trying to make an example of him. So the protesters were all like, Johnny, we need you to tell him what's what. And he did write a letter that said, quote, technically, we don't have to listen to Parliament because we were sent here directly under the king. And if you can't figure that out, we're going to have to, like, be an independent colony that doesn't need any Parliament. Okay? Unquote. And then some rich dude named Daniel started writing in the papers about how England was great. So Johnny went and destroyed that argument. But not as Humphrey Plowman. No, not this time. No, he changed his name to Novanglus.
Novanglus,
the Greek god.
Don't ask why. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And then $1 million of British tea got dumped in the harbor, and he fanboyed really hard about that. So soon after the tea was dumped, all the colonies were getting ready to have a meeting because they simply couldn't tolerate this new bunch of acts that tea land was throwing at them. And Massachusetts decided they ought to send out Johnny Adams, the smartest guy they know. I mean, the delegates from Massachusetts were trying to be, like, really, really, really low-key about being involved in this kind of insurrection and stuff. But Johnny Adams was high-key spilling the tea about some of the more conservative delegates who were wary of this whole, independence thing. Like, he spilled the tea to the point of accusing them of complete loyalty to the crown. Yeah, but, I mean, he wasn't all for independence either. He was all for protesting and making life fair, but he didn't want to totally break ties, you know? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I mean, he also didn't like how bougie everyone was acting while he was there. I have a letter right here that he wrote to his honey bunny, Abigail. Quote,
holy guacamole, Abigail. Holy guacamole. Everybody here is so freaking snobby that if someone were to be all like, 3 + 2 = 5, there would be 5 months of stupid analysis complete with CNN holograms before we would all be able to decide that 3 + 2 does indeed equal 5.
Unquote. So the conference ends, and they send a letter to King George, version 3, and they all go home, but then a bunch of people shoot each other at Lexington and Concord, so they have to have another conference, and Johnny Adams shows up yet again. This time, he sees some straight-up loyalists there, some indecisive lunatics, and some people who are hashtag done with England. Benny Boy Franklin passed around a petition that basically told England, hey, last chance, Campbell's back's about to break. I have John Adams' response right here. Quote, the camel's back is already broken. Let's just shoot him already. Get George to lead the army. Let's go. Let's do this. Unquote. You see, John Adams was chugging Red Bull to keep himself from, like, sleeping through the many meetings at this long and boring conference. So that's why he was so, bloodlusty.
Dump the tea.
While he was there, a bunch of people came up to him asking about what a new government looks like, and his response was, quote, look, I just want everybody to be happy, alright? If we split up the power into, like, 3 tree branches or whatever, like, nobody wins the Iron Throne and literally everybody's happy, okay? Unquote. So basically, at this point, everybody wanted to be independent from the tea sippers, but they just needed to declare it. And Johnny Adams was one of the 5 Power Rangers that was destined to write the thing. I mean, the Power Rangers decided that Tommy should write the first draft, but Tommy had to stick up his butt about it, so we asked our boy Johnny why he didn't do it. And Johnny was like, quote, one, I'm not from Virginia. 2, I'm loud and annoying and nobody invites me to dinner parties. 3, bro, you can write, unquote. But, I mean, he did help edit, and he was really good at yelling at people who doubted it with his fancy lawyer skills. Johnny Adams was also one of the 3 people who got sent to Howie to talk about some kumbaya stuff after the Battle of Long Island. I have a quote for that, too. Quote, yeah, we're not your subjects. That's off the table, so I guess we'll just have to keep shooting you, Howie. Unquote. Yeah, somehow this guy ended up involved in 90 committees, leading 25 of them and working 18-hour shifts. I'm telling ya, he was addicted to some colonial energy drinks, I tell ya! And while he was helping Thomas Jefferson, who was having panic attacks over this Declaration of Independence deadline, he was making an entire example treaty for the possibility of foreign relations, should the war be won. So, then he became a commissioner of France or whatever, and he got to go to Paris to, you know, ask for money, maybe a gun or two. Oh, and he took his 10-year-old child on this freaking dangerous voyage where lightning struck 20 of the people on the boat and they were literally chased by British warships. But no, take the 10-year-old child with you. That's a great idea. And then, by the time they showed up, they found out France already said yes to, like, giving America money and guns and stuff. Not to mention, he hated his two other co-workers. One was just a Debbie Downer, and the other one thoroughly enjoyed eating escargot, which Johnny thought was kind of gross. Like, he didn't even speak French, and he thought France was doing jack squat to help out anyways. So he, like, wrote a letter. He wrote a letter with a simple request. Send more boats. Did it make France send more boats? Nope. That letter went straight through the recycle bin next to the escargot shells. Then, his co-workers got a freaking big promotion, but he didn't, so he just had to go home. He didn't get it. When he got back, he quickly wrote a constitution for Massachusetts and founded the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, no big deal. Then he finally got the promotion he was looking for, finally learned French, and took two kids with him this time. Back to Paris, you know? He was a tiebreaker on most decisions this time around, though, because his co-workers were now yelling at each other over every little thing. I mean, he still didn't like French people, but he did secure the land east of the Mississippi and sell some fish while he was at it, so he wasn't completely useless this time. Then he got another promotion to Ambassador of Holland, where he went and asked for money, and he got it this time. He even got some money from Prussia. Finally, he got the ultimate promotion, Ambassador to England. And he did a pretty bang-up job, if I don't say so myself. This is how his conversation with the Pope went. Quote, "Look, I know we just kind of destroyed your matronly grip on our government, but can we, like, still be bros?" And King George, version 3, was all like, "I mean, we basically created you. Of course we can still be bros, bro." But Johnny Adams noticed that basically everybody else was still hella mad about it, so he cried, escape, all the way home. John Adams was a super political guy who worked so hard he basically never saw his family. But he was doing it all for his family.
What?
If that sounds confusing to you, I have a direct quote. Quote, "Look, I'm gonna do the politics and the war stuff, cause I want my kids to be able to do the painting and the cooking and the philosophy and the math. Can't do that stuff without a freaking government." Unquote. His largest contribution to the political rigmarole was definitely getting those checks and balances in place so the U.S. doesn't fall victim to extreme monarch-like narcissism. Or at least so that when the U.S. does fall victim to that, it's easy to just say, "I'm not gonna put up with that, not in my home," and call it a day. And apparently, he got to stick around to carry out this vision because he got freaking runner-up in the last presidential election. That means he got to stick around as the vice president, okay? Was he salty about being runner-up?
Nah.
But he was still a little salty about it, though, because Jorge got, like, twice as many votes as him and stuff, and he thought that was a sign of some bad juju, you feel me? So anyways, the vice presidente's job, other than being a glorified substitute teacher, was to be a glorified babysitter of the Senate. Oh, and they're like a tiebreaker if nobody in the Senate can agree on anything or whatever. Knowing this, Johnny Adams was all up in the Senate's business all the time. Like, he spent a whole bunch of time being all preachy about policy matters, and everybody in the Senate was all like,
fine, whatever, Dad.
But yeah.
there was some crazy, sassy nonsense that was going on because nobody in the Senate knew how to officially address the president and other government officials and stuff. The House of Reps decided that President of the United States would be just fine, but of course the Senate has to make this a big freaking deal or whatever. Our boy Johnny Adams thought that Your Highness or Protector of the Liberties sounded better, and some other people thought they should call the President Your Electoral Highness or Your Excellency. But the anti-federalists were all like, quote, "We are not England, you doofus. Stop with this bougie nonsense. We were literally trying to break away from this malarkey," unquote. And Johnny's response was all like, quote, "Stop freaking out. He's the president, for crying out loud. That's gotta mean something, okay?" Unquote. I mean, they already explained to him multiple times that it would go against the literal words and the very spirit of the Constitution to put the president on some high horse of superiority to the other branches, but Johnny kept on lecturing and arguing. So you know what they did? They bullied him. Like good old-fashioned grade school bullying, okay? Like William McClay, the senator from Pennsylvania, was tired of the 40-minute lectures, so he became pretty much the boss of the Let's Bully John Adams clique. Like, he literally thought our boy Johnny was no better than a, quote, "monkey who just put on his britches."
Wow. I don't know burn, if I quite understand burn. The joke.
That burned. And Ralph Izard, who was a part of this clique and the senator of South Carolina, came up with the honestly brilliant idea to address Johnny Adams as His Rotundity.
It's a fat joke.
Using fatty as an honorific to ridicule John Adams for wanting to use honorifics? That is some South Carolina savagery if I've ever experienced it. I mean, everybody in the Senate decided that a simple Mr. President would suffice when addressing the president, finally. And I have a quote from Mr. President Jorge Washington on the matter. Quote, "We literally just started our own government, and everybody is over here acting like middle schoolers. This is straight up embarrassing," unquote. Johnny Adams thought that this whole vice presidency thing was definitely off to a rocky start. Maybe it's because he was an old-fashioned country boy, but he just wasn't fitting in with the other kids. I mean, government officials were trusting to run the country.
Seriously?
Really, though?
For real, though?
But yeah, when it comes to, like, his job, he usually supported whatever Jorge was trying to do and made like 29 tie-breaking votes. But just because he supported Jorge's policy doesn't mean he liked the guy's way of going about business, and he didn't like the characters Jorge Washington was hanging around with, especially that Benny Franklin man. Quote, "I bet you the history books are gonna say that Benny Boy Franklin showed up with his electrical rod, shocked George Washington into existence like Frankenstein's monster, and then it'll say that those two did all the work of negotiation and winning wars and writing policy," unquote. Yeah, don't worry yourself, Johnny Adams. Nobody forgot about you. I mean, nobody really liked him at the time, though. Like, he eventually pretty much had to shut his backward-thinking mouth near the end of the first term because people in the Senate were passing around a resolution that would force him to be silent in matters that didn't have to do with policy and procedure. It didn't pass, probably because
he took the hint.
But yeah, when Alexander Hammy Tammy made the Federalist Party, Johnny Adams joined the party, even though he still hated Alexander Hammy Tammy's shenanigans. But yeah, at the end of the day, Johnny Adams hated his job. Why? Here's the quote. Quote, "Nothing I do means anything. No, seriously. I don't have the opportunity to affect any change whatsoever. It's like I'm in a kitchen and I'm trying to make pancakes, but I'm the designated glass checker. I'm over here trying to make sure nobody is putting glass in the pancakes, and I'm not allowed near the stove, and there's never any glass in the pancakes, so I'm just standing there." Unquote. And on that depressing note, we gotta end the episode, okay? Because, like, the next election is already coming up. If you got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, those adorable little emoticons that are on cupcakes sometimes, you can find Garble Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to the garbletwistery.net website, send a message in the contacts section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, @garbletwistery.net. I know what you're thinking. How in the world is this schmuck talking about the vice president and his personal beef while not talking about the political events? Well, let me be frank. Johnny Adams wasn't able or allowed to be much of an influencer. Yeah, the bullying was so bad from all sides that poor Johnny was simply stuck. But if you're looking for some crazy political events, stay tuned! Because next time, we're talking about the winner of the 1788 presidential election, Jorge Washington! And we're going to take a gander at how his first four freaking years running the country went. Get hype!
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
But he just wasn't fitting in with the other kids. I mean, government officials were trusting to run the country.